Hey everybody, this is Chris Kelso with Unmanned. Welcome to the show. I have a special guest today, Mr. Thomas Hall, who is the owner and founder of Eagle Aerial Solutions, LLC. And you can check out his website on eagleaerialworld.com or his Facebook page, which is facebook.com/eagleaerialsolutions. And one of the things that drew me to Eagle Aerial Solutions and Tom's work was when I stumbled across his opening screen, his opening landing page here on his website and his Facebook account. And it's this beautiful shot of him with a drone kind of ascending up over what looks to be a Capitol building of some sort. And it's just a really beautiful shot. And I just thought the imagery and the quality of the photography was really good. So I reached out to him and wanted to have him on the show. And Tom is a graduate of Washburn University, and he operates out of Northeast Kansas, which is where his company is, and where he's kind of growing, and he's kind of got this niche out there in Kansas. He's done some work with Gizmo Pictures, Cumulus Media, and KSNT News, he's as well as a couple other corporate entities and real estate agencies in Northeast Kansas. So let's get started. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. It's good to be on your show.
Thanks, man. So I already kind of told everybody your initial background here about how you went to Washburn University and how you're operating in Northeast Kansas. And you said that this evening you're in Kansas City?
Yes, that's correct.
How far away is that from where you usually operate?
It's about an hour drive.
Okay. So you're the oldest one at your daughter's Panic at the Disco concert, huh?
Yeah, that's her favorite band, and I knew it would make her and make a great Christmas present to get her tickets to that. So yeah.
Oh, that's awesome! Best dad ever. So, I just kind of wanted to let the audience hear about how you got started, and let you talk about how, you know, you got the company off the ground. That's a big question a lot of people have, is how do I get started in this business? And, you know, you're in the same kind of Facebook groups that I'm in, where people are talking about the 107 testing and you know, trying to figure out airspace and all this kind of stuff. So I'll let you get into that. And then I want to transition into the marketing section, because I know that once people get this thing off the ground, they really don't have any idea of what to do next. And I think you've done an excellent job of marketing your company, which is how I found you online, and it's why I reached out to you. So I'm going to let you get started here. So how did you start, man? Where did all this come from?
All this really started with I wanted to buy one of those toy drones that you can see at Best Buy that cost about $50 or $100, you know. I didn't want to blow a bunch of money and buy anything really nice or anything. I just wanted something to play with. And I went to Best Buy, and the salesman there, he steered me around, and he was telling me about the unique Q500, and I think it's the 500, but it's got four props, and the one on display had a camera underneath, and so we ordered that, and came in the mail, and it wasn't the right one. It was the one that had a gimbal, but you needed to put a GoPro in it, and I didn't want to do that. Long story short, ended up getting the Typhoon H Plus, or not the Typhoon H, but the Plus, but the Typhoon H with the Intel RealSense, and it had a steep learning curve to it. You had to do a lot to get it to work right, and I just wasn't ever really happy with it, but I got it to work, you know, and I used that for about a year. 6 months after I got that one, I graduated from Washburn with my accounting degree, and one of the presents I got for my graduation was a Mavic Pro.
Nice.
And I used the nice education discount through DJI to get the 10% off, so it was a good price for it. And I took the Mavic Pro out, and I flew that thing, and it was just completely different than flying the Typhoon. It was it did everything you told it to, and it didn't do anything you didn't tell it to do. It was just stable, and I was just thoroughly satisfied with it. And I went to 4th of July that year, and I was just messing around. You know, I didn't know a whole lot about doing commercial work or doing video work or anything like that, you know. And I went to the 4th of July where we have here in Topeka, and I went to the lake, and I was just going to shoot some pictures and try and do some video a little bit, you know, just to see what I could do with it. And a lady came up to me, and she was a real estate agent, and she wanted to know if I did that for professional, you know, if I did it commercially. And I said, no, but I'm thinking about it. And that started the whole process with me and my family where I decided to go find out, you know, would I be able to pass the test? Would I be able to get certified with the FAA to do this? Mm-hmm. And I studied online. I did not pay a penny for any of my education. The most valuable thing that I've found is YouTube. YouTube wow. is the best, one of the best things in the world. YouTube helped me get through college. I had professors who, they weren't always the best professors, and I would find other professors on YouTube that would teach the same classes, but they would teach it differently. Some were better, some were so-so, you know, but it was the same thing with what I was doing here. I found a video that Tony Northrup did where he, you know, it's over an hour long, and there's plenty of people that have seen it, but it's the one where he walks through everything from top to bottom about what you need to know to pass the test. And I used that as my primary source. And then I found a couple other ones that were okay. And then combined that with the FAA material that they give you. After studying the videos on YouTube, the FAA material actually made more sense. Mm. It was easier to comprehend. And so I went to the Olathe Executive Airport, and I took the test, and I scored a 90. And you know, you wait a couple days and you submit it, and you wait to see if you're going to pass the TSA and everything, and you get your temporary. And once I got my temporary approval, I just started thinking to myself, well, you know, I really don't have an excuse not to move forward with this. Because if I wasn't going to move forward with this, why did I take the test?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. You don't take the test to do it for fun. If you're just doing it for fun, you don't need to take no test. So I just ran process that through my head, and I realized, okay, well, what do I need to do? And so I got on the Kansas Department of Revenue site. I think it was Revenue or Department of State, something. And I signed up for the business. I set it up as an LLC. I knew it was important to have a business structure. For me, I wanted an LLC at the minimum because I didn't want the liability associated with it, with right. Being a partnership. I didn't want a partnership because I wanted to control everything. And I didn't want to be a sole proprietor because I didn't want to have that liability hanging over my head.
Right.
When I had gotten my Typhoon, I was flying it in the house, you know, because I was anxious and it was Christmas time and it was cold outside. Well, my finger got in the way, and if anybody's ever gotten in the way of a propeller, they, you know, that it'll slice your skin smooth as silk. And, you know, that's one of the things I always think about when I'm flying and I see other people flying. You know, if that drone comes down and hits somebody, how much damage is it going to do? How much is it going to hurt that person? You know, mm-hmm. And I just don't want to take those risks. But anyhow, I went through and I set up a business as an LLC, and I started thinking, okay, what do all businesses have? All businesses have a logo. So I had to find a logo that I liked. And then I had to have a phone number that was an exclusive business phone number. And then I needed a website. I didn't know anything about websites. I didn't know anything about building a website. I didn't know anything about the correct way about forming a company. You know, I got my accounting degree, but they don't walk you through and say, okay, to make a company, you do step one, step two, you right. know, you have to figure it out. And it always helps to have good mentorship as well. You know, if you have other people that you can turn to that are willing to help you, by all means, you know, find people, and they need to be people that are reputable, you know, because there's plenty of spinsters out there. There's plenty of people that are going to take your money and give you nothing. And I set up a logo that was of an eagle because the name of the company is Eagle Aerial Solutions. So I thought the best thing to have for a logo would be an eagle, you know. And then setting up a website, try and find a URL that people can go to that's easy to remember and is short, can be very expensive. You know, the really short web domains cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted a web domain eagle.com, you know, it cost about $70,000. So I, you know, GoDaddy is a really good tool that I used, and I set up Eagle Aerial World. And from there we went, and I set up a basic website on Wix, and I started putting things together. And I would always have a group of people that I would send my ideas to and ask them, what do you think of this? Is this easy to understand? What, you know, and because it's really important that you don't live in an echo chamber when you're doing your own business.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want a bunch of yes men around you either. You don't want people, you know, everybody can agree on certain things, but you want people that'll look at your business objectively. And I had plenty of people tell me, no, your logo looks bad. It looks like a Nazi eagle or, you know, any number of things. There was people that didn't like my web URL, the name of the URL. They didn't like this or they didn't like that, or, you know, everybody has an opinion. And ultimately, you know, I was just going through and doing these things when I was setting it up. And I was like, you know what? I have to make the decision. You know, everybody else has an opinion, but ultimately it comes down to me and what do I think? I have several opinions to think about. Should I listen to this person? Should I listen to this person? Or is what I have good? And I've stuck with what I have because it was what I thought was best. I was looking to make a company that was professional, a company that did not lack integrity. I mean, that's one of the most important things when it comes to businesses. I mean, you've seen plenty of businesses every day that are doing shady things, and that's not the kind of thing that I wanted my company to be associated with. So once we got that going, you know, then it was on to start connecting with people, you know. And so what do you need to do in order to get people's attention? Well, one of the biggest things you need is a portfolio of your work. If you go to a company and say, hey, my name is so-and-so and I work for this company and we do this kind of work, and they say, okay, well, show me some of your work, and you don't have anything to show them, they're going to think you're a joke. I mean, show me a professional photographer that's going to market his stuff, and he doesn't have a whole portfolio of his work that they can go to see what he does.
Right. You know? Just like a tattoo artist.
Exactly. You're not going to go to a tattoo artist who hasn't, you know, who's done 5 tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look for the guy who he's making it look like Picasso. Well, maybe not Picasso, but maybe Da Vinci. So
I'm looking at your website actually right now, and I'm looking at your eagle and everything. Did you draw that yourself? Did you go through a logo company? How did you come up with that?
I actually went online and I found a free logo design company. You put in keywords and they give you like a list of 100 different logos, and you can go through and you can use any of them. They're free, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got lucky because I went back and looked and I typed in the same keywords that I used before, and I didn't get the same result. so that logo was free, and then it just cost like $30 to get the high vector version, you know, that mm-hmm. I could download and use on websites and on merchandise and things like that. But yeah, it was off of a free website.
That's pretty cool. I paid for mine too, but I went through 48 Hours logo, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I put it in that guide I sent out, but I had designers like competing and designing it, and then I would give them feedback, and then I tailored it the way I wanted it. So
that's cool. That sounds kind of like what I've done with my watermark. I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but there's a company called Photo Logo. And you they basically have different forms of signatures that are artistic, and you pay, it's about $40 or so for a watermark signature logo. But I had them make one, and you get one free revision. But it's kind of like, you know, because they're an artist, just like we are, you don't know what it's going to look like before you pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got one, and then I asked for the revision, and they did the revision, and I liked the first one after all. So that's what I have been using on my pictures when I put them online. There's always the argument about whether you should use a watermark or not, you know, and for me, it's just, it's something that I put on there. I put it on there sometimes and sometimes not, and people will always argue, well, what if somebody steals your picture? Well, you know what? That's on them. I don't have time to spend all day scouring the web seeing if somebody's going to steal one of my pictures. You know, I try and do my work so that when it's out there, people can look at it and they can know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as well as having so many pictures out there. If I have 2,000, 3,000 pictures out there, which is, I'm not there yet, but if I have 3,000 pictures and people steal five of them, so what, you know?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw exactly what you're talking about on one of your pictures on the website. And I actually think it looks really, really nice. I mean, I thought it was just a perfect little touch to the bottom right corner of the picture. And I love the signature. I, you know, I could never tell if that was actually your signature, if you had it done. So I just think it's a really nice touch. I think it makes it look professional. So I like that.
Yeah.
Now, with regards to setting up your website on Wix and going through all that, did you have anybody help you in that, or did you just have to like truck through it and just push and push and push and just spend countless hours doing that? Because I find a lot of people have some weak website design or some weak social media design, and they're looking for advice on how to make that stuff better. And so, you know, is there anything that you can give them to maybe help them out with that?
First thing I would say is same thing I said before, YouTube. There is
for everything, huh?
Oh yeah, I'm serious. I will beat that into the ground. And you know, you have everybody in the country and people everywhere in the world on YouTube. So of course, you have to be pretty objective in the way that you're listening to people, because just because they're telling you that this is the way that you do it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the right way to do it. Right. So you kind of use common sense. But when I set up my original Wix website, you know, it worked. It had the pictures on it and it had information on it and people could navigate around it, you know, and it was pretty basic. It was clunky and it was slow and it was basic. But what I did, because the website that I have now is not what the Wix website is.
Okay, so you've made some revisions over time.
What I have now is a WordPress site.
Okay.
And I hired an individual in Topeka. His name's Dave Navarro Jr., and he has a website called Top City Web. And he built me a website, and it has it just runs smooth. It runs fast. It has a lot of extensions that run in the background that you don't ever see, that, you know, the user isn't ever going to see, and things that make it run smooth, so that the most critical thing on your website, aside from being beautiful and simple, is wonderful SEO.
Mm-hmm.
SEO is search engine optimization, for those who don't know. It is critical to have great SEO, because if your website is never found by people looking for what you do, then it's going to really cut you down on your chances. As soon as I upgraded my website to a WordPress site and I had this SEO working for me, as well as going through, you know, even small things like every picture that you have on your website should have the alt text on it. Because the more data that you put into your website, the better that it's going to be for Google to be able to find it, for other search engines to be able to find your stuff. I also had to make sure that with the web domain that I would be able to use email with that domain. So my email is, you know, thomash@eagleaerialworld.com. And it looks a lot more professional than having a Gmail or a Hotmail or something like that. If you have an email that's at your web domain, it just looks more professional.
I agree.
When I changed the website over to the new one, I started getting people calling me that I've never even talked to before.
Like me.
Because, because they found me on the internet. I had a company down in Wichita, Kansas, 2 hours away. I've never talked to anybody from that company. They're called Professional Engineering Consultants. They called me up out of the blue because they were doing construction at the University of Kansas, and they wanted aerial images of all of the work they had done. Out of the blue, never talked to them, just having the website.
And did you go down and do the work?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, and they were satisfied after we finished the project. They left a positive review on my Facebook page. That's
very important. So I have a question kind of in that last topic here. You talked about a company 2 hours away that hits you up, wants you to go down and do something for them. Now, from talking to many of you entrepreneurs in the UAS career field, people have this vagueness about pricing their services. It seems like there's really not a standard. I've seen things online between $70 an hour to $200 an hour, or even more, depending on the company, if it's, you know, Los Angeles or something like that. So when you have a project like this where you have to travel 2 hours, 2 hours back, and you don't even know maybe exactly what that work's going to entail, how do you price something like that?
When I started out, I did a little bit of research on my price schedule, and I was overcharging way too much. I was way too high, and that's why I didn't have very many clients the first year. I actually talked to a photographer in Ohio named Krista Sills, and she does professional photography, and she does some drone photography too. And we help each other out, share information, you know, because we're not in the same market and we're not competition for each other. I mean, why not? You know, and I help people out even here in Topeka. I just met up with a photographer in Topeka yesterday, or not yesterday, but this week. And I helped him out with showing him what he needed to do to get his COAs for Topeka, since we don't have Lance in Topeka. But let me back up. So pricing is really important, because you don't want to undervalue your service. When you got to think about it like an iPhone. You know, if somebody came to you with a new iPhone 10, what is it now? The 10R?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
And they said, hey, we'll sell you this iPhone 10R for $150. What are you going to think about that 10R?
It's probably stolen or off the streets.
what if Apple was selling them for $300?
I'd probably look it up. I wouldn't believe it.
Right. And if they were selling them for that, seriously, you'd probably think that, well, this is a piece of crap probably, right?
Yeah.
Because Apple doesn't sell them for that cheap. Their stuff costs more. If you went and bought if you went to the Mercedes dealer and they were selling a brand new S-Class for $20,000, you'd be like, what's wrong with it? You know,
it's a lemon.
It's the same thing with our service. You have to do a lot of work to be able to provide a photograph to someone, to provide a video to someone. People have this misconception that all you're doing is you're taking it out and you're popping the drone up in the air and you're snapping a picture and then you're sending it to them in an email. Well, we all know that that's not how it works. We all know what you have to do. You prep beforehand. If you need to get releases signed, permission given, notification, marketing, actually doing an assessment of the site, the weather conditions, going out, setting up, shooting, the whole shebang. You have to count all the hours that you put into your work because it all counts. It's all billable. And what we do now is our base package for drone work, any drone work, you're not going to get one of our drones in the air for less than $250 an hour.
Okay.
And that's for a package of 25 high-res pictures. From there, we have add-ons. You know, they can buy, they can get more pictures. They can get the option to get video. If I'm going to do a video for a client, I had a roofing company out of Ohio call me up, and they wanted the Goodyear plant in Topeka. They wanted photos of the roof and a video flying around the roof from two different altitudes, you know, and that's not any problem because I could do all of it in 1 hour. And I tell people, I say it's $250, whether it's 5 minutes or it's the whole hour. So if you want to get the most bang for your buck, you know, you want to get the most options. Granted, if they want a video, it also comes down to what kind of video do they want. Do they just need regular video, or do they need a production, something that they can put online that looks pretty and nice and has graphics and intro and credits and all that stuff? So you have to take that into account as well, because everything takes time.
And so do you have a separation between commercial business and say like residential or personal business?
Not really.
No,
not
really. So it's going to be the same no matter what.
It's going to be the same no matter who's charging. Now, that being said, you know, because I understand where you're going, I have different levels of clients as well. I'll have the regular clients that'll come to me, like, say, the real estate agents.
Right.
You know, real estate agents love to have the drone pictures and they love to have the drone video. But then I'll also get corporate clients, you know, big clients that have huge companies, and they're, I do price them a lot higher because the level of work that they want is higher than the other client, but it's also going to be used in a different fashion. So that's one of the areas where I look at. I also subcontract for some video companies, because a lot of video companies, they don't, they're really good at doing video, you know, they're doing everything from the ground and doing all the editing, but they don't want to mess with getting the drone and getting the FAA requirements and being up to date and knowing how to fly the camera and all that. So it really depends upon who the client is and the level of work that you have to do. I've had, for example, I've had a corporate client where for raw footage for half an hour, I charged them $400 because it was a corporate client, because it's being used in a corporate setting as opposed to just a regular business setting. So,
and you don't know what they're going to do with that feed. They could use that over and over and over again in different commercials and marketing schemes.
Right.
Yeah.
I know what it was going to be used for because I work with the video company a lot, but
is that Gizmo?
Yep.
Okay. So what do you have, a partnership with them, or are you independent contractor? How does that relationship work?
I always work as an independent contractor.
Okay.
They pay me directly. We work together and they tell me what they need. You know, they don't supervise me in a way that they're, you know, that I'd be considered an employee, but you know, we work together. Last summer we went out to Goodland, Kansas. We got hired by a marketing company and we went out and shot a commercial for Nextech Wireless. And I worked directly with one of the founders of Gizmo. And in that instance, he actually had the marketing company contact me directly. Instead of being a subcontractor through Gizmo, I was a regular contractor through the marketing company.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just every business situation and relationship evolves and is different. And, you know, it just depends upon what the needs of the client are. Because if you're not meeting your client's needs, then you're not going to be, they're not going to be calling you again.
And so when you work with a company like Gizmo Pictures, and they know that you're, you know, say $250 for a base or, you know, whatever you guys have worked out, do they contact you and say, hey, this is what we're looking to do, and they already know kind of what the prices are because you all have worked together so much? Or are they going, hey, this is the project we need, what's this going to cost?
They know what my pricing is like, and so they'll call me up and they'll say, hey, this is what we're looking at. And they usually try and because they really like what I do for them, they usually try and get me a better price than what I charge most of the regular companies.
Okay.
And that's where it comes in, that you know what you're doing with your drone, where it comes in that you have a good business ethic, where you have good integrity, where you're not at, how do I put it? One of the classes I took was business, legal environment of business in college. Okay. And my professor in that class said the most important thing in business is this one thing. There's a lot of important things, but this is the most important thing. He said, never be an asshole. He said, nobody likes working with an asshole. So don't be an asshole and you'll do fine.
That's good advice.
and that's what it comes down to. You know, if you're going to be a jerk to people, don't plan on them calling you again. And sometimes when you're starting out, you have to be flexible because you are new. You aren't experienced. You don't have a history of doing professional work over time. And you have to build that up. And so, yeah, I have done a few projects where they were either free or low cost, but it's not something that I do out of habit. It's something that I do when I'm trying to accomplish something new. One of the things that I'm working on that's new is doing handheld DSLR work, you know, adding it to the drone photography and drone video, you know, because what good is it if the real estate agent calls you and she needs drone pictures, but then she's got to call some other guy to shoot handheld inside the house?
Exactly.
There's money you're losing out on. So. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a excellent opportunity. And I did a show last week with Ed Gonzalez out of Central New York here, which is where I'm located. And he was talking about how they have attachments now where you can almost like a pistol handgun, kind of like a something that you can screw on to the drone or whatever it is, so that the propellers aren't moving and you can walk around and film. I mean, is that something that you have? Is that what you – I saw some of your stills online. How do you do the handheld work?
I have a handheld DSLR that I use for my stills. I don't do anything with a drone inside of a house.
Okay.
As far as stills, where a drone would be able to be used would be if you're doing a real estate video inside of a house because of the gimbal on the drone. It makes it a lot easier to have the smooth frames. So, but as far as stills inside of the house, I use a regular Canon DSLR.
Have you flown the drones inside of real estate properties?
No.
No? I bet that would be kind of – I would be nervous to do that, to be honest.
We have done a drone video inside of a school gymnasium. There was a video that was working with Gizmo on that was for the Kansas Department of Education. And it was of a thing called – body venture, and it was it had tunnels, and it was where kids walk through, and it was supposed to be simulating walking through certain parts of the human body. Well, you can see it from the ground and it looks like tunnels, but they wanted to show what it looked like from above. So we used a drone inside of a gymnasium to get that perspective, as well as of course the panning shots, you know, because it's a lot easier to get a smooth panning shot with a drone than it is to carry the camera. So.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about safety and you know, you haven't done anything real estate wise inside the house. Is that because, I mean, are you guys ever worried about the insurance? I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone gets insurance for this, but I mean, has it ever been a problem for you?
As far as
like, have you ever had an accident or anything that actually caused you to have to go to your insurance that you get the drone insurance through?
No, that's kind of one of the things where I go back to the Unique versus the Mavic Pro.
Mm-hmm.
That whole time that I had that Unique Typhoon H, you know, and a lot of people will tell you it's always operator error, but my Typhoon crashed 8 times.
Oh my gosh.
Some of it was when I was doing the programming modes where it's like, you know, the flyaway or an orbit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I fixed the arms. I replaced the arms. I had to retrieve it one time out of a frog pond. And when I had to have that fixed, and when I had to have the camera fixed one time, I sent it up to Terrestrial Imaging up there in New Jersey to get fixed. They did a really good job at a good price. But ever since I've had the DJIs, you know, I got the Mavic Pro to start with. And then March of 18, I got the Inspire 2 with the X7 camera, and I got a Spark. And I've never had a DJI drone crash.
Wow.
Let me say intentionally. We had the Spark crash intentionally one time just to prove a point to somebody, but I've never had a drone crash on a job site when I was doing work. A lot of that comes down to risk assessment, what's acceptable and what's not, as well as just really being prepared and knowing what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. Everybody knows that you're not allowed to fly over people. And there are certain times when I think that that rule is a little bit silly, but in some circumstances, because I did some video last year for a marketing or a television company where they wanted some shots of an event that was going on downtown. And so in order to be compliant with the regulations, I put the drone on the ground and I flew it up 10 feet in the air and I flew it over a van, a huge van that was in the middle of the street, and I went up 20 feet from there. And so I never flew over anybody. And then when I got the video, I came straight back down. I brought it forward and set it back on the ground, and I kept everybody back out of the way. And I wasn't worried about it crashing, and I wasn't really worried about the risk. But the thing that I always think about is, you know, when a drone crashes, or say a prop breaks, or a prop flies off, or a motor stops working for some reason, what are the odds that the drone is going to come straight down?
Right.
Yeah. It's probably going to go at an angle, some direction, and you're not going to be able to control it. That being said, that's why it's also really important to make sure that you inspect your equipment before you fly. You inspect your props to make sure you don't have cracks, to make sure that there's no damage, and make sure I don't use anything except OEM props. I know some people out there like to use the carbon fiber and stuff like that, but I'm going to stick with what they designed it with. Now, when it comes to insurance and things like that, I use the Verifly insurance on the app because that's what I've been able to afford and use at the current time. But I'm also looking into other options right now. I know that there are several guys that put their name out there on the Facebook groups as well.
Yeah. So speaking of flying over top of people and the FAA kind of, I think based on the speculation of, you know, this fear, I would say, I think they're trying to go the most conservative route where they just make sure there's nobody underneath when you're flying this. And I looked at your blog and you have a little bit of a article piece here about the drones being confiscated at the Super Bowl or before the Super Bowl, I should say. So what's going on with that? I mean, are they just taking people's drones or people set up like camp outside of the stadium or what? I mean, what's going on with that?
From what I've been reading online, apparently they had a TFR in place for a mile from the stadium days before the actual Super Bowl. And then they were going to extend that out to cover the city of Atlanta during the Super Bowl. I know they were working in conjunction with the FBI. And I can't remember. I think it was Customs Department. But they were and they're working with some private companies as well with the technology that they can, I don't remember what the companies were, but they can detect where the drones are and be able to track who's flying them because the drone's being registered. And I've heard that they're looking at prosecuting people as much as $10,000 for a violation.
Wow.
It's just not worth it. You know, it's just like, mm-hmm. you know, when here in Kansas City, when they have a football game at the Chiefs Stadium or a baseball game at the Kauffman Stadium, and they put a TFR in place for 5 miles. Well, you know, many people could put a drone up in the air and, you know, even get around certain things with unlocking the drones, you know, because only DJI has that. You could always use an Altel or a Unique or some other brand, but it's just not worth it. It's even on some of the Facebook groups with the government shutdown that they had.
Right. I was reading that stuff.
There were some people that were saying, oh, well, now that the park rangers aren't there, we can go out and fly and capture pictures. And it's like, well, you could do that. You could also go rob a bank when everybody's on lunch. Now, what is the right thing to do? What is the thing that's going to reflect the best on your character and the best on the drone industry as a whole?
Exactly, on the community. That's what's important right now.
Because your ethics are based upon what you do when there's no one there to catch you. You know, are you doing the right thing even when you'll never get caught? Or are you just doing it only because you might get caught? So it's just not an area where we like to go to.
Yes, the last thing this community needs is some sort of screw up like we just had in New Jersey at the airport. I just don't get it. I don't know who would want to do that. I didn't really read much of that article, but I hope they caught that guy.
Well, and then there
or girl or whoever did it.
Just like that, there was the one over in London as well, at Gatwick Airport. And
I didn't even hear about that one.
There was, they had it shut down for 3 days, and then it was questioned whether it was actually a drone, whether it was legitimate or not, you know, because they arrested a couple and then they found out that couple wasn't responsible. So they let them go. And it was just, you know, I know that one of the jokes in the drone groups is that, you know, anytime a pilot sees something in the sky, you know, automatically they go to blaming it on a drone. But
well,
and I can't,
they do blame drones for a lot of stuff.
I can't say whether, you know, it's accurate or not, but it seems like the drones are the new target for anything that's out of place. I would just encourage everybody, make sure that when you're flying that you're not, I tell people, make sure you're flying where you can legally fly at. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, from my military experience, drones were blamed for almost everything. You know, we had some really quiet aircraft, 25,000 feet, whatever, right? Really high up in the sky.
Yeah.
And they would fly fighter jets 10,000 feet below us in a closer proximity to the targets. And when people would get captured or you know, detained, they would say, oh, I heard the drones. No matter what. So even though you have fighter planes with you know, large engines going. So I just think it's one of those things where people fear drones right now a little bit. You're going to see, it's going to be up to the community to overcome the negative
stigma,
about it. And I think it's up to people like you and in this community to really set that standard and provide that leadership to all these new people getting these 107s and going out there and doing commercial work. And so if your voice, you know, the more you're online, I think the better the community is going to be.
Yeah. So you're exactly right about that. When I go out and fly, you know, like the event that I was telling you where I was flying over the van, but there was a lot of people up and down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing anything in a way that is where I'm surreptitiously. I have a high-vis vest that I wear when I'm out in public. You know, it's bright yellow. It has the name of my company. It says that I'm a drone operator. You know, it tells people to keep back, even though, you know, nobody does, because everybody wants to come up and talk to you because you got a drone. But I take those opportunities when I'm not, because I carry it around from site to site when I'm have a whole bunch of people like that. You know, I find little spots where I can put the drone up. And while I'm carrying the drone around and people are seeing me with the vest and with the drone carrying it around instead of flying over them, that's one of the things. You know, I get a lot of people that stop me and they have questions. And sure, it takes time. But if I got time and I can give them 2 or 3 minutes, you know, it's something that I can do to help educate the public so that it makes things better for our industry as a whole.
I think what you're doing is excellent, and it's definitely a necessity. And I hope that kind of talk gets pushed out as much as possible, especially in those groups. So, Tom, you talked about how, you know, you started out where you just wanted to buy one of these for fun, and then a real estate agent got you into thinking about how you could do this commercially. But there had to have been some sort of period of time here where you got the drone, learned how to fly it, started learning cinematography, learning, you know, digital photos, video editing. How did you go from being, you know, an accounting student to all of a sudden being a leading photography, aerial, you know, cinematography guy in Kansas?
I think it's mostly about personal growth. Just a path that I've been going down where when I got the Typhoon and I started shooting pictures with it, I just started seeing, you know, I learned a lot about editing with Photoshop and Lightroom. And there's you know, a lot of videos, once again, on YouTube. tell everybody YouTube, probably the best Photoshop guy on YouTube is Piximperfect, but there's plenty of guys on YouTube where you can learn how to do this. And it was just something where I started doing photography when I was a kid. When I was young in school, I was in 4-H, and I learned the basics of photography, composition, lighting, setting the camera, you know, how ISO, aperture, and shutter speed all work together. And it was something that I really enjoyed doing growing up, but I didn't see how I would be able to make it profitable at that time, because we were still using film back then. And now being able to shoot images and record it onto a micro SD card and then throw it into the computer and do so much with it that before you just didn't have the option to do. You know, when I was in high school, I worked on the yearbook, and we were shooting a lot of black and white. And it's really time consuming to do so much of the high level stuff with film and paper. Whereas now, all you do is you do it in the computer and you delete the stuff that you don't like, and you can work with what you want. You can make people look however you want. Everybody knows what you can do with Lightroom and Photoshop. You can make everything. I mean, most of the pictures that I tell people, the number one question I always get is that photo edited? And it's obviously from people that don't understand photography and know that we shoot in RAW. And that's probably been the thing that's helped me grow, is seeing the potential that I could do, seeing where when I started doing good photos, and I compare what I do now compared to what I do when I started, and it's just, you know, it's constant growth. It's constantly getting better. It was just something that I really enjoyed. I really get a lot of fulfillment out of it. And if it's not your passion, you're not going to like it. If it's not something that you enjoy doing, then it's not for you. You know, you could do it as a side thing, but for me, I love shooting pictures. I love going out and capturing the things. Tonight, after I dropped my daughter off at the concert, I went down to Central Kansas City, and we have an airport down in central heart of Kansas City, and so you have to use Lance to get approval, and in one grid square, you got a limit of 50 foot, and another grid square, you got a limit of 200. And so you go over to the 200 and use that extra height to get the perspective that you need. And it's just the way that the technology works with being able to combine that with the artistic element. That's where I get my fun in it. And, you know, working with the cinematic aspect of it, it's something that I've had to do a lot of, spend a lot of time. Guess where? Yes, YouTube. You have to spend hours and hours and hours researching, you know, just like I had to spend 4 years in college getting my accounting degree. You have to spend a lot of time learning what you do so that you can get better. Because if you don't continue learning, you're not going to get better. You know, if you just keep doing the same thing that you've been doing before, you're just going to keep getting the same pictures and the same videos. So you got to find new ways of doing things.
And so was there a certain catalyst that kind of took place where you decided my stuff is now good enough to charge people? Or was it just an OJT kind of thing? Has it been a growth process the entire time?
With the stuff that I was doing when I started out, I gave people a discount when I started, you know, first time client, you know, try me out. And if you like me, then I'm going to charge you full. But that's how I was doing it then. I still give first time clients a 15% discount, and they keep coming back. Now because I'm also working on doing the handheld stuff in addition to the drone, you know, I'm looking at doing portraits and other things that I can do in the off season. When I'm shooting pictures of people, I guess to me that's different, because people are, you know, your photos of people are a lot more personal than a picture of a building or of a scene or of a landscape or anything like that. Because it's them. And so I'm working on shooting free pictures of a group of people, probably about 5 or 6 different sets of portrait type pictures before I'll feel comfortable charging people, because I'm having to use a lot of Photoshop to make the pictures really stand out. Whereas most of my drone stuff I work with in Lightroom. But yeah, with the drone stuff, I started charging people right out the gate.
Okay. Have you done any weddings?
No.
Is it because you don't want to, or is it because?
As far as the drones or the photography?
Well, if you're looking at combining them, I figured that would be an interesting package to sell.
I haven't ever shot a wedding, because it's something that is a once in a lifetime experience. Well, it's supposed to be once in a lifetime. You know, many people do it 2 or 3 times apparently. but it's a memorable day, and I don't feel that my work in that kind of a aspect is on the level that I should be charging, or I should be doing it solely yet. You know, I'm looking at working with some people, and like the photographer that I told you I met last week, and I helped him with his koas. He's looking at having my service as an add-on to his service, so that way we take care of each other, because he's obviously going to be too busy shooting the wedding. You know, especially if it's a 12-hour wedding and reception and everything, he doesn't have time to go out and do the drone work. So he'll call me up when he needs that kind of thing. But that's where the partnerships come in. That's where the relationships come in, you know. And you never know when you work with somebody like that, and they can teach you things that you never even would have thought of, and vice versa. So I also think one of the things that people coming into the industry, learning how to do things, you know, it's if they're looking at doing waivers or if they need COAs to do their flights, it's also important if they're able to find a contact with the FAA. There's a guy that I've been talking to, and anytime I have a question, he says I can call him up and ask him. And he helped me understand how to get the COAs in my area, and then how to get the COA with the daylight waiver attached to it, so that I could do the work 24 hours a day if I needed to.
So you do night photography as well?
Yeah, I do.
And how does that look? What's that, you know, is that different? Do you use FLIR, IR? How does that work?
I still use the same camera. I still use my X7 on my Inspire. But I can't, I have two pictures that I took. And one was they were both at the Kansas State Capitol building. One was with the Inspire, and it was a five-shot AEB shot, so I could get all of the light. And I also did the same thing with a Mavic Pro. Now, we all know that the X7 has a much bigger sensor than the Mavic Pro does, so the shutter speed was much faster on the X7 than it was on the Mavic Pro. Well, in order to get a picture that was lit up just as well as the X7s, to do it at night, you have to have, it would have required a 3-second exposure. Well, at 300 feet or 200 feet or even 100 feet, you're not going to get most drones to sit perfectly still for 3 seconds. You're going to get a blurry shot. So the only way that you're going to get a crisp shot with a Mavic Pro is if you speed up the shutter speed so that it's crisp pictures, which are then going to cause them to be underexposed. And so the way that you fix that problem is you do 5-shot bursts. And that's what I did with the Mavic Pro. I took 2 5-shot bursts, which gave me 10 pictures in RAW. And then I combined all 10 pictures in Photoshop to be able to bring the light up to a level that I was able to develop the picture adequately.
Wow. Seems like a lot of work to do night shots.
And that's not something that I learned on YouTube. That's something I had to figure out myself.
The first time today, you didn't learn about it. So you talked about an off season. And that's something I did want to ask you a question on. I mean, when we flew military aircraft, we have crosswind limits. We have restrictions on everything in order to take off, to land, to do those kind of things. So do you all have like a checklist that you go through for weather considerations, crosswind limits, you know, atmospherics? How does that – what is your off-season?
Off-season for me, this is pretty much the off-season right now because it's the beginning of the new year. Businesses are figuring out their budgets, they're figuring out what they're wanting to do for the year, where they're wanting to spend their money and allocate it, how much they're wanting to use on services like mine. And so it's slow right now. That being said, when it comes to actual physical conditions, like you were mentioning with the weather, I use 2 apps to do an assessment electronically. One is called Hover and the other is called UAV Forecast. And I always take those out when I go to a site. And before I do my flight, I make sure that I have a screenshot of each for my flight log. Now, I don't know if anybody out there is using a flight log or not, but I do a flight log of every one of my flights. I have a log and it shows the time of the flight, the date, who flew, who was in command, the maximum altitude that was reached, the duration of the flight, the GPS coordinates where we launched from, where it was at, you know, what the common name for it was, as well as all of the weather conditions from the 2 apps that I had screenshot, if there was any issues with the flight, as well as who we received authorization to fly from. So if it was a lands flight, we put the reference number that we get through the text. If it was a flight where I had to use one of my COAs, I put down which airport I called to get the authorization through. It's really important, I think, to keep a log, because when somebody comes to you and they say, well, how many flights have you done, or how many hours have you spent flying drones? You actually have a physical number you can give them that's accurate. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I always thought about, you know, what if there is an incident? When we were talking about insurance, what if it does come down and hit somebody where you have to report it to the FAA and they decide that they want to look into it, you know? To me, it seems like it's a much better thing to have a log that shows that you go through a process, that you do your due diligence before you fly to make sure that you're flying safely. If you don't have any way or to show your history other than what's on the DJI app, that's kind of the lazy way out, and I think so that's just one of the things that I think is really important to do. As far as weather conditions, you know, I look at the weather conditions that the app provides, as well as looking in the air. I mean, most of the time I'm not going to fly a drone if it's over 25 miles an hour in the air from the ground, because it's only going to get worse when you go up higher. I never fly anytime there's moisture in the air, because I'm not going to put the drone at risk for that, as well as anybody else. And of course, you always have your visibility standards as well with the 3 miles. During this last couple of weeks, we had snow and we had fog here in Topeka. And, you know, with the polar vortex coming through, and yeah. And that was something that had to be taken into account, you know, so.
I liked everything that you just said, man. It sounds like you have an app for something. You've got a program for something. It sounds like you really do have all your stuff, you know, ducks in a row. Do you have any kind of program or app that tells you your battery life, depending on versus winds calm, say 20 knot winds up at altitude versus, you know, 5? Is there, you know, does that drain? Surely that drains your battery faster at stronger winds, because it has to spend more energy, if you will, to hover or do certain things. Is there anything that calculates that?
I don't have anything for assessing that. Basically, for me, when I do a little mental arithmetic, and you know, I went to a job site where I got contracted out, and I had to go clear up into Nebraska to shoot some commercial property for a client. And when I looked at the weather forecast 2 days before I took on the project, I told him, sure, I can do it. It's only going to be 12 mile per hour winds on the ground that day. Right. Mm-hmm. So the job site's 4.5 hours away from where I live. Mm. I drive up there, you know, I leave early that morning. I get there to the job site, and at the ground, we have 22 mile per hour winds, which only gets worse up high. Well, what do you do? Because you've just driven 4.5 hours. You're going to have to drive another 4.5 back. He wants the project. Do you not fly because it's going to be hard? If you can do it safely and without putting people at risk, you do it, because ultimately the client doesn't care if it's hard. That's what they're paying you for.
Right.
So when I see that I have 22 mile per hour winds on the ground and it's going to be faster up higher, I have to take that into account, and I have to operate efficiently. I have to operate fast. Obviously, one of the things that he requested was pictures from the 8 cardinal directions from 400 feet. There was no problem with the airspace, and so there shouldn't have been any problem capturing the pictures. However, if you try and travel from a distance of about 0.5 mile out at 400 feet in a 360-degree circle with 30 mile per hour winds, it'll take you a very, very long time. And so you find ways to get around things like that. So what we did was we go up to the height, we take a picture, we bring it back down, move to the other side, because the wind is slower, lower.
Right.
And so we were able to efficiently use our battery time to get all the work complete.
DJI. I figured DJI would have put out some sort of battery duration chart, which would show you that at these altitudes or these winds, this is how long your battery is going to last.
You know? Yeah, it just kind of varies, because there's so many factors to take into account, you know, from hovering speed to if you're moving sideways at 3 miles an hour versus if you're moving at 7 miles an hour versus if you're moving at 10 miles an hour. Obviously, the more speed that you require is going to use more battery, and the more wind you have is going to use more battery. So
I tell you what though, man, if you do some test and evaluation on that, and you put together a product for the community that says, this is based off my testing, my calculations.
Yeah.
You'll sell that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Cool. So, man, we've talked for about an hour and 20 minutes, I think. And there's so much to talk about in UAS, and I love it. And I know you could probably go for another hour if I let you. But I'm going to conclude this podcast this evening. And we'll have to get back together another time in the future here to go over some more stuff, because I know you're going to be definitely a guy I'm going to want to reach out to again. So I want to thank you for being on the show, Tom. It's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. And just so everybody out there knows, eagleaerialworld.com and facebook.com/eagleaerialworld. Is that correct?
On Facebook, it's Facebook
Aerial Solutions.
Eagle Aerial Solutions.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, be sure to check that out. And Tom, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And I hope your daughter had a wonderful time at her concert.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you too.
Do you have to go pick her up?
Oh yeah.
All right, man. I'm gonna let you go. And I'm gonna get off this call.
All right. Have a great night.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
Yep. Bye.